Welcome to the Young Turks and drop it. Power panel, Jay Huger, Johnny Pie, Wizard of Waz. We got everybody today. Okay, fine. John Iderola, Wozni Labre. Woz also, of course, the Prime Minister of Woznia. And you should check that out on twitch.tv/TYT. I guess John does a show called Damage Report. Okay, so we got a great show ahead for you guys today. But Woz is gonna come back for you guys. We're gonna do the first hour, and then he's gonna come back for Juneteenth, because Young Turks today leads immediately into Juneteenth. Somebody tell Trump, because he invented Juneteenth, so I'm sure he's gonna wanna watch it.
Maybe he'll be on the special.
So I'll tell you who is on the special: Bridget Todd, Kenya Evelyn, Dr. James Simmons, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, Jason Carter, Charles Coleman, Wozni Labre, Wisdom Cole. They're all there tonight. So stay right here, watch throughout. Love it. Okay. Tons of news for you guys, including progressives in Congress have been upbraided. Do not criticize Joe Manchin. Okay, so much great and horrible news as always. All right.
Okay.
Pie.
Let's do it. If you're not afraid of China, you might be soon, because there's a lot of people that are working very hard to terrify you about China, whether it's military threat or economically it's a big contender. There's this sort of Cold War brewing. And why not? For certain, for certain elites, it's a great way to bulk up the defense budget if you're going to be scared about possible war with China. Any sort of economic policy can be justified when it comes to trade with China. But there are thankfully at least some politicians that are pushing back against this narrative. And we want to give credit to Bernie Sanders, who wrote an entire op-ed trying to get people to chill just a little bit when it comes to China. It's available at Foreign Affairs, but here's some of what he had to say. It is distressing and dangerous that a fast-growing consensus is emerging in Washington that views the US-Chinese relationship as a zero-sum economic and military struggle. The prevalence of this view will create a political environment in which the cooperation that the world desperately needs will be increasingly difficult to achieve. And he specifically talks about the need to solve all sorts of different problems, including concerns about human rights, economic issues, climate change. These are all things that we can't simply pretend China doesn't exist for, or make them into our chief rival over. He calls out one of his colleagues by name, saying, "A few months ago, my conservative colleague Senator Tom Cotton compared the threat from China to the one posed by the Soviet Union during the Cold War." Quoting Tom Cotton as saying, "Once again, America confronts a powerful totalitarian adversary that seeks to dominate Eurasia and remake the world order." And Bernie says, "And just as Washington reorganized the US national security architecture after World War II to prepare for conflict with Moscow, Cotton wrote, today, America's long-term economic, industrial, and technological efforts need to be updated to reflect the growing threat posed by communist China." And he puts this, what we're seeing now, develop when it comes to politicians, as he points out, like Tom Cotton, and occasionally politicians like Joe Biden, who have some things to say about China recently. He puts it in historical context, recent historical context, saying, "The rush to confront China has a very recent precedent, the global war on terror. In the wake of the 9/11 attacks, the American political establishment quickly concluded that anti-terrorism had to become the overriding focus of US foreign policy. Almost two decades and $6 trillion later, it's become clear that national unity was exploited to launch a series of endless wars that proved enormously costly in human, economic, and strategic terms, and that gave rise to xenophobia and bigotry in US politics, the brunt of it borne by American, Muslim, and Arab communities. It is no surprise that today, in a climate of relentless fear-mongering about China, the country is experiencing an increase in anti-Asian hate crimes." And as I mentioned this morning, on the damage report, that violence continues. Culver City actually just yesterday had an incident of that sort. So we have a little bit more that we can talk about some other politicians, but Bernie Sanders is hoping to change the conversation about the future of diplomatic ties between the US and China.
Yeah, so first of all, great to see that America is moving their ire from one side of my family to the other. Okay, so I'm Muslim, so we took the brunt of it. And after 9/11, my wife is Chinese, and so obviously our kids are half and half. So now they're moving on to anti-Chinese hate. And again, this is not just Trump now. This is basically the Washington establishment, and that's who Bernie Sanders is calling out, and that definitely includes Democrats. So now he says. And if you follow Bernie Sanders, you might be a little confused. So I want to be clear, and this is really important. And actually, I think maybe even the most important part of this story. Bernie Sanders has not been in favor of just unmitigated free trade with China throughout. So simpletons might look at that and go, wait, I thought you were against dealing with China. Now you're saying you're in favor of dealing with China, right? I don't get it. Well, that's because the world's not black and white. The question isn't whether to engage with China, the question is how to engage with China. And the answer isn't we should love them and write them love letters as Trump did with North Korea, or we should nuke them. No, the world is not black and white. The answer is almost always somewhere in the middle. It doesn't mean that the moderate position or the centrist position is right. It just means the extremes are unlikely to be right. And did Bernie carry that nuance forward to today? Yes, he said that the Chinese government is surely guilty of many policies and practices that I oppose and that all Americans should oppose. The theft of technology, the suppression of workers' rights in the press, the repression taking place in Tibet and Hong Kong, Beijing's threatening behavior toward Taiwan, and the Chinese government's atrocious policies towards the Uyghur people. So again, simpletons on the right or people that think they're on the left or something will go, oh no, I don't get it. He's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Oh, come on. On the one hand, he says China's bad on some things, and on the other hand, he says we shouldn't nuke them. I don't get it. It's just really not that hard. So yes, we should have a smart strategic policy towards China. We don't need to have them as an adversary. On the other hand, you can't be just let everything slide and go, you're gonna steal our IP. Okay, yeah, no big deal, right? Oh, you're setting up concentration camps for the Uyghur people. Oh, no problem. No, the answer is, here's how we're going to oppose that, and here's how we're gonna work with you on climate change. Because we don't have a choice. They're among the top two powers in the world. We're one, they're the other. We have got to find a way to work with each other while pushing them in the right direction. So as usual, Bernie Sanders, a rare voice of reason in DC.
Yeah.
Well, Cenk, I think you're wrong when you say that we don't need to make those guys our enemy. How else are we gonna justify damn near $1 trillion in our budget every single year for the military, right? Like if we don't have a scary enemy, you can't justify that in a country where inequality, is at record highs, right? Like you can't justify the amount of resources we commit to planes that don't even freaking work for enemies who we don't even freaking have, right? Like that's the entire point of it. And you know, I thought about it, you know, when I was reading Bernie's op-ed, I was like, man, we don't even talk about ISIS anymore. Remember when ISIS was gonna come, some guy in a turban in a black pickup was gonna come and strangle your babies in their carriages while you slept? Like, remember that? It's completely over. We don't even talk about it anymore. I think even 2016, it wasn't even a focal point of either one of the candidates' platforms, right? Like we're over as Americans, we're over the war on terror. So we need a new big bad, and I guess that big bad is China.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you said that because I want to talk a little bit more about the future of where this conversation is going to go. So we had the status quo. Bernie is trying to put out there that hey, maybe we don't need a stupid, pointless, expensive Cold War, and he's not the only one, of course. Other politicians, including Representative Ilhan Omar, have spoken out. Ilhan said recently, we need to distinguish between justified criticisms of the Chinese government's human rights record and a Cold War mentality that uses China as a scapegoat for our own domestic problems and demonizes Chinese Americans. And the thing is, like,
got nuance.
Oh God, it's like
it hurts my head. You
accept reality and don't go to war with them. Anyway, but what are we supposed to do? Like, when I think about the last 20 years, you know, we invaded a couple countries and then just stayed there, you know, forever. Now they're gonna use China as a way to continually spend ever more on, as Wazi pointed out, planes that don't work. You know, it doesn't matter how many hundreds of billions of dollars you throw at them, you apparently can't make them stay aloft. And there won't ever be any justification for it. It'll just be, woo. Like, nothing's happening. I don't think this is gonna be like the last Cold War and there's gonna be proxy wars between us. I don't think economically that's viable. But they are still gonna try to sustain this sort of thing. And I, like, at least as we were talking about with TDR, when it was the Middle East, like there's conflict going on, we're losing soldiers. People can see that and they can potentially get sick of it. And there could be a reaction to it. But this is mostly gonna be military budget and an occasional speech that gets people pissed off at China or whatever. It seems so much easier to sustain without any rationale, just as an excuse to change some trade policies and to pump up the military budget.
Yeah.
So what do we do? How do we get people fired up against this Cold War when nobody really supports it anyway?
Yeah, nobody supports it. The right wing doesn't support it, the left wing doesn't support it. There's only one set of people who support it, and you guys are gonna be shocked. It's politicians who get tons of financing from the defense industry. Whoa, that is, I did not see that coming.
but and the thing is, you know, the thing about China, why this is a foolhardy enemy to pick, our economies are like this, they're intertwined. You can't separate what we do from what China does because, you know, basically 35, 40 years ago, American business decided we wanted all their cheap labor. And now that they've built up a pretty sizable, like, middle and wealthy class, we want their consumers. We want to sell stuff to them, right? Like, they're too important to us to ever actually spite or smite them. So this is just a weird sort of you know, enemy to try to just take up on a whim. It doesn't make sense. We are China at this point.
Yeah, but actually it was, you bring up a really important point, because part of the reason why we weren't as much Cold War mongering against China for the last 20, 30 years was because we loved that they were opening up their markets. So McDonald's, et cetera, were rushing in and they were thrilled that China's opening up and basically becoming capitalist. But now that China has built up their own businesses, they are starting to block Western interests and particularly American business interests within China and blocking access to that market of over 1.2 billion consumers. That's a market four times larger than America. So now part of what's driving is not just the defense contractors, but other corporations pressuring corporate Republicans and Democrats. Hey, now make them open up, okay? Otherwise, you know, threaten them and stuff, right? Because we need that market, And guys, again, a nuance on all fronts, right? So, is China an actual threat to Hong Kong and Taiwan? Yes. So my wife's originally from Taiwan. I know a lot of folks from there, and they all have to serve in the military and they train. And I forget the exact number of hours or days now. My recollection is their entire military is training around 8 hours, because that's how much they've calculated America will take to get there and rescue them. Okay, because Taiwan cannot do a war with China. Mm-hmm. So I forget if it's 8 hours or 2 days or whatever it is, but whatever the number is, that's all, their entire training is just hold until America comes, okay? And so it's important that we protect our allies. So it's not like, oh, we're not doing Cold War, so who cares about Taiwan? Take it anytime you want, right? No, you've got it, and then by the way, should we want the markets opened up so that American companies, there's no such thing as American companies, they're all multinational, but some of the companies that started here and are based in Delaware, that they open up as well and are able to compete there? Yes, because some of those folks work here and that would create more jobs to be able to sell goods into China. So we want all those things, but we don't need to do it by building a thermonuclear submarine that doesn't work, but funnels like $500 billion to Raytheon.
Yeah.
Right? That's the That's the underlying issue that not only do the politicians never talk about, but the media almost never talks about. I mean, there's a multi-trillion dollar elephant in the room. That's the defense contractors. Mm-hmm. And that's driving most of this Cold War mongering that Bernie Sanders is fighting against.
Yeah, and my final thought is, I feel to some extent, I think the media's, the fact that they wouldn't have that conversation is partly complete and utter ignorance on virtually every other country other than the United States, including the United States actually. But then partially, I think at a much lower level, a little bit of fear of seeming not patriotic enough. That if you were not to, like, it feels a little bit like that thing over the past two decades of, no, you have to rally with your country. This is our national enemy. How dare you talk about them as someone that we should work with, that we should try to get along with, that we should try to then influence to, you know, get better on human rights. I feel like there's a little bit of that too. And the way that things are going, the way that politicians in both parties, you know, the way their narrative is when it comes to China, I worry that that pressure on media is going to get stronger. So all the more important that there are both media as well as politicians that are willing to speak out for a different path. That said, what were you gonna say?
No, what I was gonna say is I think some of the propaganda has seeped into American thought amongst the citizenry. I saw it myself in my own job where, you know, Daryl Morey, general manager then of the Houston Rockets, he put out a free Hong Kong tweet, and it caused basically a brouhaha, international incident, because you know the NBA does a lot of business in China, and the Chinese government don't play. Yeah. If you want to make money over here, you don't get to talk crap about our government. And a lot of people over here felt like, yo, those dudes don't get to tell us how to talk. We have freedom of speech, democracy, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's a lot of negative feelings towards China within the population. Not that people want to see us go to war or something like that, but people definitely see China in an extremely unfavorable light these days.
Yeah. Well, we certainly saw over the last year a lot of attempt to tie that in with the pandemic, of course, too.
Yep.
In any event, we do have to take our first break. We come back, we're going to be talking about the fact that for something like 4 months now, no Republican has cared at all about January 6th. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Well, they found a way to worry about it. We'll break down that way after this.
Back on the Young Turks, Cenk, John, and Waz with you guys. John is in the news business, so he's got more of it.
I do, actually. I'm running low, but I think I've got something. Yes, okay, let's talk about this. It took less than, 48 hours from Tucker Carlson saying, hey, maybe the FBI did an insurrection, to now it's just every Republican. Every Republican seems to agree with it. And they started at the bottom, so here's Louie Gohmert.
So if there were federal agents that were involved on January 6th, we really need to know what the FBI knew and when they knew it. And not only that, we need to know how much participation did any of our federal friends, either at DOJ, FBI, or any of the intel community, what kind of role were they playing?
Okay, I have a couple of quick questions. So first of all, I need to know what Louie Gohmert knew, if anything, and when he knew it before he forgot it, because he doesn't appear to know anything. Also, dude, you got questions, you know what answer them? Maybe some sort of commission. Like, they love to talk about, like, no commission, and here's my list of questions. I have so many. And by the way, like, so they throw out the FBI did it, or I don't know, the CIA did it, or maybe it was the NRO or the NSA, I don't know, it was something. Any of this is possible, by the way. There are many things that could occur in this world, but I know this, they don't have any more reason to believe that it was one of those groups than I do that it was the Forest Service. We watched Tucker Carlson come up with it on air. He started one section of a monologue saying maybe the FBI was involved, and like a minute and a half later he said they were involved. And then the next day he said it's on you to prove that they weren't. That's not how anything involved in truth telling or truth discovering actually works. So is it possible? Sure, as we'll get into, it's not like the FBI and other groups haven't gotten involved in things like this before to make groups look bad historically. But there is no evidence yet that that's true, except like we're throwing these concerns out. Louis Gohmert's already on the House floor, and we got more coming. It's just a thing now. There's no pumping the brakes on this, it feels like.
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you guys why they've switched to the FBI in a second. But first of all, I disagree with John. I think you could just make up who's responsible, then they have to prove that they didn't do it. So the person I'm making up is Tucker Carlson. I think he mainly orchestrated the Capitol riots along with Antifa tourists and the FBI. And then he spearheaded all of them. He's like, tourists, you go left. Antifa, you go right. FBI, right up the middle. Okay, and Tucker was the mastermind behind it. I dare him. He said, look, he's gotta prove it wasn't him. He's got to prove it.
Just prove it. Why not? Why not prove it?
But why won't you prove it, Tucker? Why won't you prove it? It's getting weird out here, okay? I love that. And it actually is, as somebody pointed out in social media, yes, sometimes actually positive things happen in social media, though it's rare. They're like, when I pointed out, wait, you guys got to make up your mind. Is it Antifa? Is it tourists? Or is it the FBI, right? And one of the commenters said, no, actually it's part and parcel of propaganda to get you to believe two completely different things about the same phenomenon. Because once it's part of the trick is to get you to divorce yourself from logic, reason, and reality. And then they replace it with propaganda. So then you'll believe anything, that it was a tourist dressed as Antifa, disguised as FBI. And they go, yeah, obviously. Obviously, right? Now, but this is gonna take a dark turn in a second, but I agree with John. Louis Gohmert's like, what did the FBI know and when did they know it? If only there was a commission to study what happened on that day. Louis, this is a little embarrassing. You voted against that commission. Mm-hmm. But remember, Louis's mental. Look, I don't know if he's like a deranged liar or just deranged, but I'm going with just deranged. He's the guy who gave the speech about how Barack Obama was reconstituting the Ottoman Empire. Okay, now at the end of Obama's—
that would have made you very happy. You would have voted Obama for a third term, Jake, wouldn't you?
We're back, baby. No, I would not have wanted that. But at the end of Obama's second term, the Ottoman Empire remained entirely unreconstituted. Okay, they were not put back together, etc. But no amount of right-wing conspiracy theories being debunked ever convinces them that the next one isn't going to be true. Like Donald Trump is retaking office, Obama setting up FEMA camps, etc. It doesn't matter. They're not. And this is what's really trippy, and it's really hard for all of us to wrap our mind around it. They just don't care what's true. They don't care at all what's true. And it's amazing. Now the dark turn. Why are they replacing the tourist theory and the Antifa theory with the FBI theory? Because they've given up on democracy and they are now agitating towards getting everybody to fight the tyranny of government. And so Matt Gaetz talking about Second Amendment rights need to be used against the tyranny of government. Then Representative Cawthorn yesterday, we covered on the show, talking about its Second Amendment is not for hunting, it's for to use against the tyranny of the government. 28% of Republicans say it's might be time for violence. And now here comes Tucker Carlson saying, now if you're really upset at anyone, it should be the FBI. And they do seem a little tyrannical. Mm-hmm. So this is headed down a very dark path.
And it's like you took the words out of my mouth, Cenk, because I'm confused by the idea of right wingers discrediting the police, the FBI, the cops. Like the idea that, we live in a world where right wingers find the FBI to not be credible, and they're part of some fake insurrection to make right wingers look bad. I never thought I would see this world. Now, are they gonna follow that logic to, them inventing fake terrorists out of whole cloth, like the FBI doing that practice where they like give people bombs and guns and be like, hey, you wanna blow stuff up? Then lock them up and say that they're locking terrorists up? Or are we gonna erode their credibility when it comes to basically prosecuting and fighting a sham drug war in which literally millions of black people and brown people have been incarcerated for decades behind. I mean, if we're in the process of discrediting the FBI, let's freaking do it. But the idea that, again, the right wing is no longer pro FBI, i.e. no longer pro cop,
yeah,
is just staggering to me.
I sort of doubt it. I feel like it's gonna end up like Tucker Carlson every 4.5 weeks says something about how he doesn't like the ruling elites, and then he pushes for every economic interest the ruling elites have. It's just, it's fake, it's not substantive, it's convenient and timely. But it's increasing in number. If Louie Gohmert is the bottom rung of the Republican Party, about half a rung up, you have people like Matt Gaetz, who during an appearance on Newsmax show Cortez and Pellegrino, which I'm just learning exists, Matt Gaetz said he believed that the FBI might have had a role in organizing and participating in the attack on the 6th.
Here we go.
And had written a letter to FBI Director Christopher Wray to demand answers. He says the FBI clearly doesn't have objections to selected releases of video and images from these days, but it begs the question, why is there not more transparency? What did the FBI know, and when did they know it? Which is just every stupid person just puts that at the end of their questions to sound smart and historic or whatever. And Matt Gaetz is the one who goes on, I believe he did this on Twitter, where he is like, well, you know, the FBI, they infiltrated groups, like for instance in the civil rights movement, which is totally true. He doesn't give a damn about it, but it's true. And it's like, is there anything worse than weaponizing accurate historical information to push something that, while theoretically possible, like the FBI being involved in that, he has no reason to actually believe. Why does Matt Gaetz have questions? Because he watched Tucker Carlson. I guarantee there is literally nothing beyond that. But it's enough that you now have another congressperson that's pushing for this. And we have a third. Marjorie Greene says we need names and answers about the FBI operatives who were involved in organizing and carrying out. She's not saying we need to know if they were. She's saying we need to know which ones did, because they did. And she says that there was a backup plan to stop Trump in Russia collusion witch hunt, which is grammatically fun. Now we are finding out they were deeply involved in January 6th. So it's been, I don't even think it's been 3 days. Tucker Carlson said, is it possible they were involved? Now she's saying they were deeply involved. So by Sunday, what will be left of any of this?
Yeah, so John, first of all, they're the deep state. If they're gonna get involved, it's gonna be deeply.
That's true.
Second of all, you mispronounced Marjorie Taylor.
Greed.
And thirdly, now going to why they're going to this, back to why they're going to this in the first place. Look, so the FBI has two elements to it that are gonna relate to the story. One is, do they have a history of spying in on protesters? Absolutely. We've all said it during the civil rights era, they were horrible. And when they were led by J. Edgar Hoover, they weren't trying to ferret out crime, they were just trying to basically suppress and oppress anyone that wasn't white right wingers. And that's not hyperbole, that's a fact. And if you don't know that, you don't know anything about American history. And they had Fred Hampton murdered, and we can go on and on, right? Nowadays, the FBI is more of a machine. That doesn't mean that, oh great, they don't do anything wrong. No, they, after 9/11, they investigated Muslims that were perfectly innocent, et cetera, et cetera. But lately, the FBI has actually caught a bunch of white supremacist terrorists. And I've given them credit on the show a number of times for that. Hey, look, they stopped a bombing. They had the truck full of bombs. They were going to go there and they were gonna blow up a building in the middle of the country. And the FBI stopped that. So thank you. We don't want buildings blown up, right? And they've stopped Muslim terrorists too. But lately, unfortunately, there's been way more white supremacist terrorists. Now, all of a sudden, FBI becomes the enemy. When they're spying in on black people, they're awesome and wonderful and Blue Lives Matter and cops and law enforcement and law and order. They stop white supremacist literal terrorists, right? I'm not even talking about January 6th, I'm talking about all the other white supremacists. They say, oh, they were about to bomb a synagogue, they were about to bomb a building they thought had immigrants in it, etc. Right? I don't know about this FBI. Okay, looks a little like deep state to me, right? Now, the second part of it is, I hope to God that the FBI had informants inside Oath Keepers and Proud Boys. If you're not infiltrating those groups that are constantly saying online, we want to do violence, Right. Not everybody in those groups says it, but a lot of them say it, and their leaders say it, and they revel in it. In order to get into Proud Boys, you have to go through a violent initiation, etc. But that's the least of it. And so now there's 36 people who were arrested involved in January 6th, involved in those groups, etc. So if the FBI is doing their job, they are not infiltrating random right wing groups. I would hate that. No matter how much I disagree with the groups, I would not want the FBI infiltrating anything like that, right? But if there is specific actionable intelligence that they can prove to a court to get a warrant or whatever else they need, that somebody's going to commit violence, that is exactly what the FBI is supposed to investigate. Mm-hmm. And so that's why in a conspiracy theory, you only need one or two things to seem like they're going in your direction. So Tucker's actually being kind of smart about this. He says it's the FBI. Later, we'll find out that the FBI, of course, had informants inside. Oath Keepers. Oath Keepers is potentially one of the most violent groups in America, right? And so once you find out that the FBI had an informant inside Oath Keepers, what's Tucker gonna come out and say? Aha! I told you.
When that was not what he claimed.
That is not what at all what he claimed, right? But he's gonna say, and every knucklehead right winger is gonna be like, aha, FBI has informants. Yeah, it's informants, we all know that. And they should have informants in violent groups, right? But that doesn't mean they planned the Capitol riot. That doesn't make any sense. But every conspiracy theorist will not only, this is write it down in stone. You will see this all over social media. The minute there's any story about an FBI informant, every right winger in social media will be like, you guys thought we were crazy. The FBI has informants inside these groups. So they obviously planned it along with the tourists. Okay.
Well, look, the only other thing I want to say about this, because I want to play this last video is, I think maybe this is obvious. I don't know, I think I need to see. Alex Jones said that he was part of spreading, he told Trump that it was the FBI or something, right? So there's a link to Alex Jones, but I think the link is actually more significant than that. All this is a savvy version of, it was a false flag. That's all it is. So in the same way that you might have heard that QAnon is going away because they don't use the term QAnon very much anymore. They don't necessarily talk about the Great Storm. They've taken away some of the rhetoric that were considered sort of the symbols of QAnon, but those communities are still around, those people are still around, the conspiracy theory continues. They figured out that saying false flag makes you look like a crazy person. But if you just say the FBI did that insurrection, well, you're being more specific and you're on TV after all. Maybe there's something to it. All this is they took Alex Jones, who is way too crazy. People aren't gonna pay attention to him. They're not gonna give him any credibility. But Tucker Carlson's on TV and he avoided some of the buzzwords. And now we have multiple Congress people all saying it was a false flag until you prove that it wasn't, about an attack that left multiple people dead. So that's how the right wing is evolving. They've taken the craziest fringe radicals, they've washed it 5%, and now it's on TV, and millions more Americans will believe that that sort of stuff is true.
Last thing I'm gonna say about this, this all began with Tucker Carlson saying, some of the people that the government has not charged yet are unindicted co-conspirators, hence they must be FBI. That's totally false, but I just wanted to point out one more time, Donald Trump was an unindicted co-conspirator of Michael Cohen in the Stormy Daniels case. So Trump is the FBI and hence the deep state.
That's how deep it is.
Oh my God, the call's coming from inside the house.
Anyway, Jesus. Okay.
And most importantly, guys, what's most important about these conspiracies and everything else, they're distractions. You know, you don't gotta talk about how you feel, Marjorie Taylor Greene, about the infrastructure bill. You don't gotta talk about how you feel about the state of American work, getting Americans back to work and decent paying jobs.
Yeah.
Why would you ever talk about that when you can peddle nonsense about the FBI plotting against you and your QAnon homies?
That is true. That is very true. Now it's the FBI and a little bit of critical race theory, which we're gonna talk about in a minute. It was Mr. Potato Head, Dr. Seuss before. Like, at least it's changing. They're keeping things fresh. That said, we're gonna take our second break, and when we come back, we got a lot more for you.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk, John, and Waz with you guys. I'm just gonna read two things from Twitch. We love our Twitch audience. First of all, Jeff Waldorf gifted a sub and resubbed for the 10th month.
Nice.
People, check out Waldorf Nation. So he originally came up as a viewer of TYT and now has his own show. We love that. Nimbus Space Wagon Dragon wrote in, Friday Power Panel, booyah, drop it. Thanks for all you do, TYT. Sometimes the truth is so depressing, but you give it to us in a way that at least empowers us to try for change. I love that. You got it exactly right. No matter what happens, we're gonna keep fighting for change. And I'm the most hopeful man in America. We're gonna get change one day. Mm. Okay? All right, John.
Let's do this. The recent tide of bills in state after state that seeks to cancel any teacher who teaches about racism, who says things about America's history that are true and unfortunately politically incorrect for that. That's not going away anytime soon. Why do I know that? Because Donald Trump has now become personally invested in the critical race theory debate. He decided that Juneteenth would be a great day to publish an op-ed calling for effectively the banning of any discussion about racism in public schools. And note, he was in favor of Juneteenth becoming a national holiday when he was president. But now it's a great day to say things like this. For decades, the America blaming left has been relentlessly pushing a vision of America that casts our history, culture, traditions, and founding documents in the most negative possible light. Yet in recent years, this deeply unnatural effort has progressed from telling children that their history is evil to telling Americans that they are evil. We have more. Let's just pause for 1 second to note that Donald Trump didn't come within a mile of writing one single word of this, but it does have his name attached to it. He definitely didn't write it.
I thought
it's coherent.
Yeah,
it's abhorrent, but coherent. Anyway, he goes on. In classrooms across the nation, students are being subjected to a new curriculum. Yeah, he uses the word curriculum. Definitely. Dude's always ready to like whip out a curriculum. Anyway, designed to brainwash them with the ridiculous left-wing dogma known as critical race theory. Instead of helping young people discover that America is the greatest, most tolerant, and most generous nation in history, screw you, Scandinavia. It teaches them that America is systematically evil and that the hearts of our people are full of hatred and malice. Indoctrinating generations of children with these extreme ideas is not just immoral, it is a program for national suicide. Yet that is exactly what the Biden administration endorsed recently in a rule published in the Federal Register, aimed at inflicting a critical race theory inspired curriculum on American school children. This is what the Biden administration wants to teach America's children. That is not in any way true, but it is now fact. That is dogma for millions of Americans, conservative Americans, who see, oh, Trump is now involved in this conversation. And if you're a Republican politician, if you're, you know, running for some state office, you're in the legislature, how fast do you want to try to ban critical race theory so that Donald Trump will notice you?
Yeah, so I think that Republicans, of course, have dropped the dog whistle. Now it's a human whistle, we can all hear it. And so
they call that a whistle.
Yeah, I think so. That's the other word for it. I looked it up. This is just like, can you believe they're teaching about slavery and racism in America? We should go back to covering it up. And from the same exact people who told you we can't take down the Confederate monuments because it would be erasing history. So you're allowed to erase history if you talk about slavery being, yeah, evil, right? But you're not allowed to erase history if you're putting up a beautiful statue of a Confederate general and celebrating him in the middle of your town, okay? So you guys see the hypocrisy there. But what I found to be interesting in this is that they think that if you teach history both the upsides and the downsides of any place, that means that you're calling everybody in that country evil, right? And that makes no sense at all. I know they're right wingers, the logic not required, right? But I want to ask, what is the alternative, right? Because look, honestly, every country does propaganda, and I get it, right? Like, so I grew up in Turkey until I was 8 years old, and I came here. And then I remember when we were doing Turkish American Day parades and stuff, we used to have this hilarious chant that I've told you guys about a couple of times. Turkey is the biggest. There's no other country that's even big. And I remember thinking, even as like a 10-year-old, 12-year-old, like, I'm pretty sure America's pretty big. And I'm pretty sure we moved to America because it's pretty good. Okay. So now, so I love America. And I say that unabashedly. Now, does that mean that's it? Everything America did is gold. Everything we did in the past, it's over. Congratulations, America. You're perfect. And you've always been perfect. I mean, come on, how absurd is that? Part of the reason I love America is we try to fix ourselves. In fact, it's in our founding document. In the Constitution, it says you should amend this thing. You should do political revolutions. You don't pick up a musket like we did, okay? Or an AR-15, okay? Pick up a convention, a constitutional convention, or it's actually not exactly constitutional, convention to amend the Constitution, etc. Whatever process you have, a democratic process that we built into the Constitution, we gave you several different ways to amend it. That's how you do it for to get to a more perfect union. And these guys are saying, no, let's not do that. Leave it alone, don't touch anything, don't fix it. Whatever you do, don't fix it. And by the way, go back and pretend that everything was hunky-dory for all of it. If you can't see that that's absurd, you're trying super hard not to see it.
And for me, it's a little bit different for me as the child of two immigrants. Oftentimes, and I know my immigrant, child of immigrant people out there gonna hear me. Oftentimes my mom would be like, Haitian people are the best. They're so pure of heart. Oh my God, if you go to a Haitian's house as a guest, they're gonna give you their bed. They're gonna make you breakfast. They're just, Haitian people are just so amazing. Then out the other side of her mouth, she's like, I can't stand Haitians. They so jealous. They always talking stuff behind your back. They the worst. Can't do it with Haitians. Why 100%. Can't we do this with America? Mm-hmm. And understanding that, yes, we have some great things and we have some BS as well. Why can't we do that? I don't understand. I think there's just something intrinsic to like feeling like a white person that you just gotta hold on to it. We're just perfect. We're just the best. And this, we've never done anything wrong ever. It's so ridiculous to me.
No, yeah. I know why. First of all, let's note for the record, that was hilarious. And 100% true. Same thing with Turkish immigrants, right? Oh, Turkey is the best. Oh, we are reconstituting the Ottoman Empire, just like Louis Gomer said. Okay, we are going to win. We are the best, right? And then you say, hey, you know, maybe we should ask fellow Turks in America for help. Oh, do not ask them. They are bums and losers. They will never help you. They will never help you. Okay. Turks never help each other. They know learn nothing. Okay. But it's not because of that. The question is whether you're in power or not. And so when you're in power, you want to hold on to power. So in the Turkish government does the same thing as, and it's right wing, and it does the same thing as the right wing government in America, right? When I was gonna say when right wingers are in charge, which is kind of perpetual here. But anyway, depending on how you look at it. So yeah, they say, oh, Turkey's the biggest, there's no other big, blah, 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 right? And so they don't do nuance either. So, but that's because they're in power. Whereas when you're an immigrant, you step out of power and you're a minority in a new country, then you could be more nuanced and go, oh, we have upsides, we have downsides, yeah. Both of your home country and of your, you know, of your previous country. And by the way, today, Josh Mandel running for Senate as a Republican, said that Ilhan Omar shouldn't be supported, she should be deported. Ilhan Omar is, of course, a United States citizen. Of course, you cannot deport United States citizens because you would deport them back to the United States. And not only that, she's a United States congressperson. But to them, they think black, Muslim, not American. And it's deeply ironic because if you don't believe in equality and justice, which is in parts of our founding documents, and certainly that was the stated goal of our founding documents, well, then you don't believe in America.
Yeah.
And so Josh Mandel and Donald Trump in their actions are deeply un-American.
Yeah, Josh Mandel almost couldn't be more explicit that he values skin color over the Constitution. He'll say that he loves the Constitution, apparently doesn't count because she's a citizen, you can't deport her, except that she's black. So I guess you can. So which of those does he value? It's pretty clear.
Yeah, why are we even having a conversation about deporting her? Why don't we deport Josh Mandel? I mean, it's just this, they're both 100% American citizens, right? But if you said that, the right wing go, I mean, where are you going to deport him? You can't deport him. He's an American because he's white.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
So let's turn now to what's coming. So if you've been following the national conversation over critical race theory, Not to that just yet. I'm doing a little reset there. If you've been following the national conversation over critical race theory, well, what are the next steps? We've seen more than 22 different state bills attempting to ban either critical race theory specifically or literally the discussion of the concept of racism. So we now have Juneteenth as a national holiday. You could not actually explain what it is or why it needed to happen because that would get into slavery, and that's now banned in states like Texas. Well, Donald Trump has a prescription for what conservatives with the MAGA world should do in states around the country. So expect that every Republican is going to follow this template now. He says, first, every state legislature should pass a ban on taxpayer dollars going to any school district or workplace that teaches critical race theory, which inherently violates existing anti-discrimination laws. That's all nonsense, but they're going to interpret it vaguely and they're going to try to weed out the funding for these schools. Second, each state should create its own 1776 commission to, and man, this is going to be something, to examine the public school curriculum and ensure that students are receiving a patriotic pro-American education. Third, parents have a right to know exactly what is being taught to their children. That one's brief. Fourth, parents need to organize locally in every school district in America to eliminate Action Civics and other versions of the effort to contort traditional civics education. Seriously, he did not write this. Fifth, any parent who objects to the material being taught to their child in public school should get an automatic voucher, empowering them to pick another school of their choice. Six, states need to take back control of their schools of education and credentialing bodies to ensure that they are not churning out radicalized teachers. So not only should the teachers not teach racism to kids, the schools shouldn't teach it to the future teachers either. And along the way, we weed out any conversation about racism to stop propaganda for our children and instead replace it with a patriotic pro-America education, which I'm sure is just gonna be stuffed with historical truth.
Well, that was gonna be my question. Is a patriotic pro-American education actually an education? And I'm asking it in a literal way. I don't mean that you shouldn't be pro-America, that's your opinion. But is history being taught as pro-American actually history? Or is it propaganda? So it's not to say, hey, we should teach kids an anti-American education. That would also be, in a sense, propaganda. How about we teach them actual history instead of making it pro one country or anti one country, even if it's our country? They see, I mean, it's like saying, oh, you know what we need to do? We need to teach pro America math, okay? What does pro America math look like? And so it is just as fair to ask, what does pro America history look like? Does it look like actual history or a history that you've mangled and corrupted and changed to make it appear to match your agenda?
Yeah, my problem with this is that it applies absolutely zero critical thought to anything. There are no countries or people who we can study who are just pure and benevolent and awesome and just greatness from their inception to the present point. Like that doesn't exist in history. Every civilization, every country, every culture has its dark and bleak moments. That's just the nature of man. I don't know why this is so hard for everybody to understand. And I don't know why they're so insecure about young, let's face it, white Americans learning that the United States perpetuated atrocities in the past and that we should learn from them and that we should do much better going forward. Why is this so threatening to these people?
Yeah,
because it goes to their core identity. They've been taught that they're the best thing since sliced bread, and so if you teach them, hey, maybe America also had issues, right? And look, we're looking to fix those issues, etc. That would hurt their fifis, so they would catch some feelings out of that, and it's more of an emotional thing. I mean, look at how silly this is. When Trump, in this same op-ed, talked about a pro-American education, he said it should be about history English and social studies, right? They needed to be pro-American. So I was kidding about the math, but literally, how do you make English pro-American? Mm-hmm. First of all, it's English, and by definition, not American. Okay, wait till he gets a load of that. He's like, where did this England thing come from? Okay, we gotta get rid of that. Okay, we can't have that anymore. Oh, they're white. Okay, it's all right. It's all right.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.